Chapter 8. Big at the mighty ocean. I ain't. Apostrophe, ah, but it's cruel, apostrophe said Emily. I have seen it very cruel to some of our men. I have seen it tear a boat as big as our house, all to pieces. Apostrophe, I hope it wasn't the boat, that apostrophe, that father was drowned in. Apostrophe said Emily. No. Not that one, I never see that boat. Apostrophe, Norham? Apostrophe, I asked her. Little Emily shook her head. Not to remember. Apostrophe, here was a coincidence. I immediately went into an explanation, how I had never seen my own father, and how my mother and I had always lived by ourselves in the happiest state imaginable, and lived so then, and always meant to live so. And how my father's grave was in the churchyard near our house, and shaded by a tree, beneath the boughs of which I had walked, and heard the birds sing many a pleasant morning. But there were some differences between Emily's orphanhood and mine, it appeared. She had lost her mother before her father, and where her father's grave was no one knew, except that it was somewhere in the depths of the sea. Besides, apostrophe said Emily, as she looked about for shells and pebbles, your father was a gentleman and your mother is a lady, and my father was a fisherman, and my mother was a fisherman's daughter, and my uncle Dan is a fisherman. Apostrophe, Dan is Mr. Peggotty, is he? Apostrophe said one. Uncle Dan yonder, apostrophe answered Emily, nodding at the boathouse. Yes. I mean him. He must be very good, I should think. Apostrophe, good? Apostrophe said Emily. If I was ever to be a lady, I'd give him a sky blue coat with diamond buttons, nankeen trousers, a red velvet waistcoat, a cocked hat, a large gold watch, a silver pipe, and a box of money. Apostrophe, I said I had no doubt that Mr. Peggotty well deserved these treasures. I must acknowledge that I felt it difficult to picture him quite at his ease in the raiment proposed for him by his grateful little niece, and that I was particularly doubtful of the policy of the cocked hat, but I kept these sentiments to myself. Little Emily had stopped and looked up at the sky in her enumeration of these articles, as if they were a glorious vision. We went on again, picking up shells and pebbles. You would like to be a lady? Apostrophe, I said. Emily looked at me, and laughed and nodded yes. I should like it very much. We would all be gentle folks together, then. Me, and Uncle, and Ham, and Mrs. Gummidge. We wouldn't mind then, when there comes stormy weather. Not for our own sakes, I mean. We would for the poor fishermen's, to be sure, and we'd help 'em with money, when they come to any hurt. Apostrophe, this seemed to me to be a very satisfactory, and therefore not at all improbable picture. I expressed my pleasure in the contemplation of it, and little Emily was emboldened to say, shyly, don't you think you are afraid of the sea now? Apostrophe, it was quiet enough to reassure me, but I have no doubt, if I had seen a moderately large wave come tumbling in, I should have taken to my heels, with an awful recollection of her drowned relations. However, I said no, apostrophe, and I added, you don't seem to be either, though you say you are, apostrophe, for she was walking much too near the brink of a sort of old jetty, or wooden causeway we had strolled upon, and I was afraid of her falling over. I'm not afraid in this way, apostrophe, said little Emily. But I wake when it blows, and tremble to think of Uncle Dan and Ham, and believe I hear 'em crying out for help. That's why I should like, so much to be a lady. But I'm not afraid in this way. Not a bit. Look here. Apostrophe, she started from my side, and ran along a jagged timber which protruded from the place we stood upon, and overhung the deep water at some height, without the least defense. The incident is so impressed on my remembrance, that if I were a draftsman I could draw its form here, I dare say, accurately as it was that day, and little Emily springing forward to her destruction, as it appeared to me, with a look, that I have never forgotten, directed far out to sea. delight, bold, fluttering little figure turned, and came back safe to me, and I soon laughed at my fears, and at the cry I had uttered, fruitlessly in any case, for there was no one near. But there have been times since, in my manhood, many times there have been, when I have thought, is it possible, among the possibilities of hidden things, that in the sudden rashness of the child, and her wild look so far off, there was any merciful attraction of her into danger, any tempting her towards him permitted on the part of her dead father, that her life might have a chance of ending that day? There has been a time, since when I have wondered whether, if the life before her could have been revealed to me at a glance, and so revealed as that a child could fully comprehend it, and if her preservation could have depended on a motion of my hand, I ought to have held it up to save her. There has been a time, since I do not say it lasted long, but it has been when I have asked myself the question, would it have been better for little Emily, to have had the waters close above her head, that morning in my sight, and when I have answered yes, it would have been. This may be premature. I have set it down too soon, perhaps. But let it stand. We strolled a long way, and loaded ourselves with things, that we thought curious, and put some stranded starfish carefully back into the water. I hardly know enough of the race at this moment to be quite certain, whether they had reason, to feel obliged to us for doing so, or the reverse, and then made our way home to Mr. Peggotty's dwelling. We stopped under the lee of the lobster outhouse to exchange an innocent kiss, and went in to breakfast glowing with health and pleasure. Like two young mavishes, apostrophe Mr. Peggotty said. I knew this meant, in our local dialect, like two young thrushes, and received it as a compliment. Of course I was in love with little Emily. I am sure I loved that baby quite as truly, quite as tenderly, with greater purity and more disinterestedness, than can enter into the best love of a later time of life, high and ennobling as it is. I am sure my fancy raised up something round that blue-eyed mite of a child, which etherealized, and made a very angel of her. If, any sunny forenoon, she had spread a little pair of wings, and flown away before my eyes, I don't think I should have regarded it as much more than I had had reason to expect. We used to walk about that dim old flat at Yarmouth in a loving manner, hours and hours. The days sported by us, as if time had not grown up himself yet, but were a child too, and always at play. I told Emily I adored her, and that unless she confessed she adored me, I should be reduced to the necessity of killing myself with a sword. She said she did, and I have no doubt she did. As to any sense of inequality, or youthfulness, or other difficulty in our way, little Emily and I had no such trouble, because we had no future. We made no more provision for growing older than we did for growing younger. We were the admiration of Mrs. Gummidge and Peggotty, who used to whisper of an evening when we sat, lovingly, on our little locker side by side, Lor, wasn't it beautiful? ... Mr. Peggotty smiled at us from behind his pipe, and Ham grinned all the evening, and did nothing else. They had something of the sort of pleasure in us, I suppose, that they might have had in a pretty toy, or a pocket model of the Colosseum. I soon found out that Mrs. Gummidge did not always make herself so agreeable as she might have been expected to do, under the circumstances of her residence with Mr. Peggotty. Mrs. Gummidge's was rather a fretful disposition, and she whimpered more sometimes than was comfortable for other parties in so small an establishment. I was very sorry for her. But there were moments when it would have been more agreeable, I thought, if Mrs. Gummidge had had a convenient apartment of her own to retire to, and had stopped there until her spirits revived. Mr. Peggotty went occasionally to a public house, called the Willing Mind. I discovered this by his being out on the second or third evening of our visit, and by Mrs. Gummidge's looking up at the Dutch clock, between 8 and 9, and saying he was there, and that, what was more, she had known in the morning he would go there. Mrs. Gummidge had been in a low state all day, and had burst into tears in the forenoon, when the fire smoked. I am a lone lorn creature, apostrophe were Mrs. Gummidge's words, when that unpleasant occurrence took place, and everything goes contrary with me. Apostrophe, oh, it'll soon leave off, apostrophe said Peggotty. I again mean our Peggotty, and besides, you know, it's not more disagreeable to you than to us. Apostrophe, I feel it more, apostrophe said Mrs. Gummidge. It was a very cold day, with cutting blasts of wind. Mrs. Gummidge's peculiar corner of the fireside seemed to me to be the warmest and snuggest in the place, as her chair was certainly the easiest, but it didn't suit her that day at all. She was constantly complaining of the cold, and of its occasioning a visitation in her back which she called the creeps. At last she shed tears on that subject, and said again, that she was a lone lorn creature and everything went contrary with her. It is certainly very cold, apostrophe said Peggotty. Everybody must feel it so. Apostrophe, I feel it more than other people, apostrophe said Mrs. Gummidge. So at dinner, when Mrs. Gummidge was always helped immediately after me, to whom the preference was given as a visitor of distinction. The fish were small and bony, and the potatoes were a little burnt. We all acknowledged that we felt this something of a disappointment. But Mrs. Gummidge said she felt it more than we did, and shed tears again, and made that former declaration with great bitterness. Accordingly, when Mr. Peggotty came home about 9 o'clock, this unfortunate Mrs. Gummidge was knitting in her corner, in a very wretched and miserable condition. Peggotty had been working cheerfully. Ham had been patching up a great pair of water boots, and I, with little Emily by my side, had been reading to them. Mrs. Gummidge had never made any other remark than a forlorn sigh, and had never raised her eyes since tea. Well, mates, apostrophe said Mr. Peggotty, taking his seat, and how are you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, we all said something, or looked something, to welcome him, except Mrs. Gummidge, who only shook her head over her knitting. What's amiss? Apostrophe, apostrophe said Mr. Peggotty, with a clap of his hands. Cheer up, old mother. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Peggotty meant old girl. Mrs. Gummidge did not appear to be able to cheer up. She took out an old black silk handkerchief, and wiped her eyes, but instead of putting it in her pocket, kept it out, and wiped them again, and still kept it out, ready for use. What's amiss, dame? Apostrophe, apostrophe said Mr. Peggotty. Nothing, apostrophe returned Mrs. Gummidge. You've come from the willing mind, Dan? Apostrophe, apostrophe, why yes, I've took a short spell at the willing mind tonight, apostrophe said Mr. Peggotty. I'm sorry I should drive you there, apostrophe said Mrs. Gummidge. Drive? I don't want no driving, apostrophe returned Mr. Peggotty with an honest laugh. I only go to ready. Apostrophe, very ready, apostrophe said Mrs. Gummidge, shaking her head, and wiping her eyes. Yes, yes, very ready. I am sorry it should be along of me, that you're so ready. Apostrophe, along o' you. It and along o' you. Apostrophe said Mr. Peggotty. Don't ye believe a bit on it. Apostrophe, yes, yes, it is, apostrophe cried Mrs. Gummidge. I know what I am. I know that I am a lone lorn creature, and not only that everything goes contrary with me, but that I go contrary with everybody. Yes, yes. I feel more than other people do, and I show it more. It's my misfortune. Apostrophe, I really couldn't help thinking, as I sat taking in all this, that the misfortune extended to some other members of that family besides Mrs. Gummidge. But Mr. Peggotty made no such retort, only answering with another entreaty to Mrs. Gummidge to cheer up. I am what I could wish myself to be, apostrophe said Mrs. Gummidge. I am far from it. I know what I am. My troubles has made me contrary. I feel my troubles, and they make me contrary. I wish I didn't feel them, but I do. I wish I could be hardened to them, but I ain't. I make the house uncomfortable. I don't wonder at it. I've made your sister so all day, and Master Davy. apostrophe, here I was suddenly melted, and roared out, "No, you haven't, Mrs. Gummidge," apostrophe in great mental distress. "It's far from right that I should do it," apostrophe said Mrs. Gummidge. "It ain't a fit return. I had better go into the house and die. I am a lone lorn creature, and had much better not make myself contrary here. If things must go contrary with me, and I must go contrary myself, let me go contrary in my parish. Damn, I'd better go into the house, and die and be a riddance." Apostrophe apostrophe, Mrs. Gummidge retired with these words, and betook herself to bed. When she was gone, Mr. Peggotty, who had not exhibited a trace of any feeling but the profoundest sympathy, looked round upon us, and nodding his head with a lively expression of that sentiment still animating his face, said in a whisper, "She's been thinking of the old un." Apostrophe apostrophe, I did not quite understand what old one Mrs. Gummidge was supposed to have fixed her mind upon, until Peggotty, on seeing me to bed, explained that it was the late Mr. Gummidge, and that her brother always took that for a received truth on such occasions, and that it always had a moving effect upon him. Some time after he was in his hammock that night, I heard him myself repeat to Ham, "Poor thing! She's been thinking of the old un." Apostrophe and whenever Mrs. Gummidge was overcome in a similar manner during the remainder of our stay, which happened some few times, he always said the same thing in extenuation of the circumstance, and always with the tenderest commiseration. So the fortnight slipped away, varied by nothing but the variation of the tide, which altered Mr. Peggotty's times of going out and coming in, and altered Ham's engagements also. When the latter was unemployed, he sometimes walked with us to show us the boats and ships, and once or twice he took us for a row. I don't know why one slight set of impressions should be more particularly associated with a place than another, though I believe this obtains with most people, in reference especially to the associations of Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.